I think the enemy is trying to infiltrate and frustrate the dissemination of truth. Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verses 1 through 8. Follow along with me. There is an appointed time for everything, and there is a time for every event under heaven. Get this principle down first. Everything that happens is part of an appointed plan. Notice that he says an appointed time. Who appointed it? God appointed it. It's a part of the tapestry of life. In a tapestry, you have bright colors and you have dark colors. In a life, you have good times and bad times. This is true of any life. Some have more of one than another. But it's always going to be the shifting back and forth from the good to the bad, the light to the dark, the easy to the difficult, to whatever degree God has planned for that life. God's plan is comprehensive, and it covers everything in your life. Nothing is ever going to happen in your life that He has not foreseen and that He has not made provision for ahead of time. Notice, therefore, several things that God has made provision for, that He's planned for. First of all, He says, a time to give birth and a time to die. Now, this is talking about life, just life in general. There's a time to give birth. Fortunately, Gina will be very happy for that. When that time comes, it's time. There's also a time to die. Now, we could look at the time to give birth as the very happy time and the time to die as a very sad time, but it's not always that way. Think of the many children that have been born in warfare. Think of the children that have been born in times of natural disaster. Think of the children that have been born in the family that already had more mouths than they could possibly feed. It's not always the joyful time that it's made out to be. Or the child that's born deformed, or the child that's born blind, or something like that. There can be a tremendous amount of sorrow sometimes in a birth. In the same way that there can a lot of times be joy in death. Death can be a joyful time for a believer who has finished their race and knows it's time to go home. It can be a great time, but God's planned it all. Notice He says, a time to plant and a time to uproot what is planted. Here we're talking about agriculture. Here we're talking about something that affects every single one of us. And what is it? The growing of food. I mean, we all like to eat. We all take advantage of that which is grown. But there's a right time to plant, and there's also a time after the harvest when the stock is standing there bare to uproot, to plow the soil, to prepare for the next time. If you plant when it's time to uproot, you're not going to get anything, are you? If you uproot when it's time to plant, you're not going to get anything. There's a right time to do everything. My father always used to put it this way, the right move at the right time is worth 10,000 at the wrong time. God has designed in a year what we call seasons. And in those seasons, there's a right time to do each. Planting and uprooting. But it's just an illustration of life. There's a right time for sowing seed in the spiritual realm. And there's a right time to withhold it. And we have to understand, there's a time for the sowing of seed in the teaching and the training and the instruction of a child, in the development of a character. There's also a time in that child's life for the uprooting of the weeds that are coming in. It's the same way in your life. There's a time when you can take in the Word and you can plant the seed of the Word of God in your life. There's also a time when there has to be some uprooting in your life. And the uprooting is difficult. Sometimes God is actually plowing your soul. He is breaking up, as Hosea says, the fallow ground of your soul. He's taking you through a time of difficulty and affliction and adversity, and it seems dark and it seems difficult, but we have to understand something. Why does God break up the soil? Why does He disrupt a life? Why does He allow somebody to go through all that affliction? Because it prepares the soul for the planting of the seed. It's necessary. It has to be. Verse 3 says, a time to kill and a time to heal. And this has to do with injury. See, we always think of this in terms of human beings killing and healing, and that's certainly true. But anyone that's grown up in an agricultural economy, out on a farm, out on a ranch, realizes that there are times when injury occurs. We're using this in the animal realm now. And there's a time when the horse that's broken his leg has to be shot. Why? It's a merciful thing. There's a time when an animal that is born that possibly will never be able to survive out of mercy and grace and kindness has to be, we put nice terms to it, put down or put to sleep. There's a time to kill. Certainly in the defense of your home, there's a time. The same God who said, thou shalt not commit murder, said two chapters later in the book of Exodus, if a criminal breaks into your home and you kill him, you're justified. There's a time to kill. But there's also a time when the injury is not so severe that it requires putting the animal down. We have to be able to distinguish. The dog that runs out in the street and gets hit, is it time to kill? Is it time to heal? We have to recognize that.
What would be the spiritual application of that?
Well, the spiritual application is just in dealing with human beings. I mean, we don't kill in the sense of killing anyone, but there's time to let people go. And there's times when you can help them, and there's times when you can't help them. You just have to let them go. Let them go their way. Notice that he says there's a time to tear down and a time to build up, even in construction. You build a nice new building. 50 years later, it's not a nice new building anymore. It's crumbling. It's falling down. Someone else now wants to build a nice new building. The plot of ground that the original building was put on, that owner, that constructor, that builder had all of his dreams and hopes of what. How many times do you see buildings going through a refurbishing? Did you ever stop and think of the dreams that that building was built with in the first place? Oh, we're going to build this nice building. We're going to have this great business. And maybe it works for a while. And then there comes a time when it no longer works. And then the building sits idle. And then there's holes in the roof. And then the plumbing no longer works. And pretty soon someone comes along and says, I want this plot of ground, but the building is of no value at all. It's time to tear it down. Why? In the same way that God comes along in your life and my life, and things that once were shiny and new and things that were valuable, whether they be attitudes, whether they be actions, whether they be possessions, God comes along and says, it's time to tear that down. It no longer serves a purpose. Even in spiritual growth, how did Paul put it in 1 Corinthians 13? When I was a child, I thought as a child. That's good for a child. I spoke as a child. I reasoned as a child. But when I became a man, when I grew up, when I reached maturity, what did I do? I had to abolish the childish things. There's a time to tear those things down. Look at this in verse 4. A time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance. Here he's dealing with emotion. Whose life could you find that doesn't relate to emotion? We all go through the roller coaster of emotion. We look at the time to laugh, that's the high point. The time to weep, that's the low point. Up here we're mourning. I'm sorry, up here we're dancing. Down here we're mourning. But the amazing thing is that a lot of the greatest strides in our lives come down here. How much have you learned in the happy times of life? You didn't learn much of anything. You just had a good time. How much did you learn when everything was going your way? Usually you don't get lessons at those times. You learn the lessons down here. When you're grieving, when you're mourning, when life's tough, we start paying attention. When we ask the question, why does God let this happen to me? There's always a good reason. The first and foremost, he wants to get our attention. Once he has our attention, he can begin to teach us. It's just like working with a mule. You can never accomplish anything with a mule until you first get his attention. And that sometimes takes strict measures. Does God care about our emotions? Of course he does. He's the one who created them. He never wants them to rule the mind, the will. He never wants them to dominate our life, even though they do for most people. Most people who are presented with two options, a crossroads in life, and one has to do with reason and one has to do with feeling, will take the way of feeling. But it's not the right way to go. Emotion can be very unstable and mislead you. Is there anyone here that's never had to weep? Surely you've all had times when you laugh. Have you ever seen times when you laughed because someone else wept? Or the other way around? Have you ever seen times when something happened that made you mourn that caused someone else to dance? See, there's a right time, and if it's God's time for mourning and you're dancing, you're out of step. If God says it's time for dancing and you're mourning, it's out of step. You see how important it is? Paul was trying to stress in the Roman epistle, I urge you therefore, brethren, to simply develop a sense of urgency for life because life is marching on. Every second, every minute, every hour that passes is bringing us closer to the finish, closer to the end. And life is brief even at its longest. It's just a breath that appears, James says, for a little while. Notice verse 5. There's a time to throw stones and a time to gather stones. Here we have defense. Throwing stones in the ancient world was a simple form of defense. That was their weaponry. They'd use a sling or even hurl it with their hand. But you know what? If you have to defend yourself with stones, what happens? Pretty soon you run out. Guess what? Then it's time to gather. You better gather them quick. David went out against Goliath. What did he do first? He gathered stones. Then what did he do? He picked up five, the number of grace, one for Goliath, four for his brothers. He was ready for all of them. He figured one each. And then there came the time to sling the stone. Now, if he had gone down into the creek bed and picked up a bunch of stones and said, I'm going to practice, and he practices, and he shoots all five of them, and then he goes out against Goliath, all of a sudden, he's gathering stones when he ought to be throwing stones. I mean, being out of step with God can be a life or death question. But even more critical than that, it can be an eternal question. There are things much worse than death. Failure in the spiritual realm is certainly one of those things. A time to embrace and a time to shun embracing. Here he enters into affection. There's a time to embrace. There's a time not to embrace. There's a time to display affection for another human being, and there's a time when an embrace should be withheld. It should be shunned. Possibly because to embrace would be hypocritical. See, in the ancient world, when people met, they would often embrace. Paul talks about the Christians giving to one another what he called a kiss of love or a kiss of peace, a holy kiss that meant that everything was right and proper and in order. Generally, in those days, the men greeted the men and the women greeted the women, so hopefully it was all in order. But what if it's an enemy? What if it's a conniver? What if it's a person who's a backstabber? Think about this in our churches. As the people come in, as the people leave, everybody's greeting everyone else, everyone's shaking hands, as the old saying goes, grinning and grabbing. And then people go their way. How many times after a handshake and a smile and the words, it's good to see you today, was there slander behind the person's back? Backstabbing behind the person's back. It would have been better not to have shaken hands, not to have said the words, than to say them hypocritically. Paul says in Romans chapter 12 later on, let love be without hypocrisy. Don't fake it. Don't be phony about it. If you can't say something nice, you don't have to be mean. You don't have to be rude. You don't have to be vicious. Simply say what can be said. The old saying that we grew up with as children would carry us a long ways. If you have nothing good to say, say nothing. You don't have to attack. You don't have to tear down. Simply say nothing. It's a time to refrain from embracing. Certainly there are times when the embrace has the wrong motives, that's a time to refrain. You're aware of it as well as I am that there's a whole lot of embracing going on out there in the world that shouldn't be done. It ought to be shunned at that time. Verse 6, a time to search and a time to give up as lost. Anybody here ever lost anything? You ever lose something valuable? You know how you search? You go crazy. If there's anybody else living in the house, God help them, because they're probably the one who lost it. Husbands and wives know how this works. What'd you do with it? I always put it right here. Where did you put it? You had to move it because I always put it right here. And then she says, here it is in your coat pocket, dear. Oh, yeah, well, thank you very much. There's a time to search. I'll never forget when they had the floods in Texas a couple of years back, and a couple of young people got swept away in those floods, and there was a father who searched and searched, and I mean, they'd have this on the news. It got morbid after a while. He would not give up the search for that child. There's a time to search, and there's a time to say it's lost and to give it up as lost. Sometimes after saying it's lost, God surprisingly brings it back. Oh, there it is behind the washing machine I lost 5 years ago. Sometimes that happens. God has even planned for losing in your life and in mine. You ever lose a friend? There may be a time when you search, when you seek, when you try to reconcile, when you try to restore, but there's a time to realize it's not going to happen, and you simply have to give up. You have to let go. There's a time to keep and a time to throw away. I'm familiar with this one after moving Mom. You know? I mean, we're like magnets. We accumulate junk. And, I mean, that junk is valuable. It's like garage sales and yard sales. It's always amazing to me. I mean, you find a treasure. You only paid 50 cents for it. You're so happy it made your whole day to get that treasure for 50 cents. To them, it was junk to get rid of. They wanted it out of there. I mean, you'll sometimes go someplace and they'll say, why don't you just buy everything? What would you give me for all of it? It's junk. It's in their way. They want it out. Unfortunately, sometimes people treat people that way. That friend that was the greatest friend now is someone to cast off. Shouldn't be that way. But there's a time to keep. There's a time to throw away. I mean, that may have been your favorite shirt. I went back up to the old ranch I grew up on and found a shirt that was my favorite shirt when I was 7 years old. Now, it was a little bit raggedy. It was hanging in the old closet. I remembered that shirt. That was my treasured possession. I took my school picture wearing that shirt. Well, Will was about 7 years old at the time, so he wore it. He probably hated it, but that was my favorite shirt. By golly, somebody was going to wear it. There came a time when that shirt had to be thrown away. It just had to go. And that's why he says in verse 7, there's a time to tear apart and a time to sew together. There's a time when something is so valuable that you patch it up, you put it together, you keep it at all costs. Sometimes that valuable garment that you have might be better used being ripped. Someone's wounded. A situation of injury develops, and all of a sudden, no matter how valuable that shirt, no matter how valuable that garment, it's torn. Why? Because now it can serve a greater purpose. You see? God has all these things in mind. The day that you went and bought that cloak, that coat, whatever the garment might be, and you were so proud that you got it, yet God knew that it was going to serve a higher purpose. If you've never been in a situation of severe injury when anything that was handy was ripped and shredded to cover, to stop the flow of blood or something like that, it might not make sense to you, but your life's not over. God has plans. And we never know His plans. And we never know why He gives us what He gives us. And we never know why He takes what He takes away. But what the author here wants us to understand is simply this. He has a reason. Trust Him. He knows what He's doing. There's a time to be silent and a time to speak. And this refers to social interaction. You know, there's a time not to say anything at all. There's a time when silence says more than volumes. There's a time when you're attacked. There's a time when you're slandered and maligned. There's a time when you're accused. That's a time to be silent. Don't justify yourself. Don't try to vindicate yourself. Don't try to defend yourself. Let people say whatever they will. Be silent. That's a time for it. Then there's another time when it's time to speak. And a good time to speak is when you are in the presence of someone else who's being run down, or you're in a situation where someone not present is being run down. That's a time to speak. Anyone who allows another person to be shredded, we're not talking about just simply taking note of human frailty. I mean, we all do that, you know. You know so-and-so, isn't he kind of strange? He always does this. That's not necessarily maliciously tearing the person down. But when it comes to malicious slander, gossip, maligning, regardless of the person, I've probably opened my mouth more times in defense of people that I didn't really care for. Times when I would love to have just jumped in and said, yeah, you don't know half of it, I'll tell you even more. And yet, those are the times that I've tried the most to speak up and to say, you don't know. You don't know the person's life. You don't know the situation. The best thing to do is just leave it alone. Look at verse 8. He says, a time to love and a time to hate. Is there a time to hate? He says here, there is. David in the Psalm says, I hate those who hate your word. Jesus said, unless a man hates his father or mother, husband or wife. What did he mean by that? The word hate has all kinds of ranges. It can mean anything from putting second, which is what Christ meant in that passage in Luke. You have to put them second, and it'll seem to them like you hate them. What do you mean you're going off to Bible class again? Sorry, but this is priority. This is my commitment to the will of God. What do you mean you're going off on another mission trip? Sorry, but the Lord's plan and purpose has to come first. Well, it seems like you hate us. No. But I know that's how it seems. There's a time to love and a time to hate. And sometimes they're hard to tell apart, aren't they? Sometimes doing something out of love for a person looks to them more like hate. And sometimes people will do things to you in hate, and on the surface, it'll be covered with hypocritical love. There's a time for war and a time for peace. What does all this tell us? It simply tells us this. Anything can happen in time. And Paul is saying, I urge you, therefore, why? We have to develop a sense of urgency. We have to orient to time because time is all we've got. Moses put it this way in Psalm 90 and verse 12, teach us to number our days, to count our days, so that we can offer to you a heart filled with wisdom. Moses lived 120 years. None of us are going to live that long. Yet he understood that time is fleeting, that time is all you've got. And time that's not redeemed, time that is not wisely managed, is time that's lost. An unknown author wrote this, time is too slow for those who wait, too swift for those who fear, too long for those who grieve, and too short for those who rejoice. But for those who love, time is eternity. Time can be a tremendous blessing, or sometimes time can be a tremendous problem. You know, it's interesting when you start talking about time. Time is relative, isn't it? Think, for example, of a period of time, 2 weeks. 2 weeks on vacation. Does that seem the same as 2 weeks on a new diet? One person said it this way, our days are identical suitcases. They're all the same size. It's just that some people pack more into them than others. We all have 24 hours, but what is accomplished in 24 hours? It all depends. Merrill Douglas said this, there's no way on earth you can save time. People are always talking about saving time. Do you realize that the thing that has driven us crazy in this generation is what started happening at the turn of the century, and they called it time-saving devices. Right? I mean, back in the old days, people had time to visit with a neighbor, time to sit in the evening, time to reflect, and then Satan introduced time-saving devices. What a perfect camouflage. So the women who used to do the scrubbing on the old scrub board now had a washing machine. And it wasn't very long before it was no longer your hands in the sink. Now you have a dishwasher. Wonderful time-saving devices. Just throw them in there and turn it on. Throw the clothes in there, turn it on. Along came the automobile. Wonderful time-saving device. Now it doesn't take you all that time that it took to walk or ride. You hop in the flivver and you're off. But we fail to realize what's happened. Now we're running around maintaining all of our time-saving devices, which takes money, which requires a lot of work. Many hours go into the gas that gets us down the road. You're going to go, let's say you're going to go 10 miles. Just figure. You've got to work not only for the gas and the oil, the tune-ups, but for the payments on the car. Break it down into how much you're paying on the vehicle, and break that down into the time sequence of a day. It gets pretty costly with the gas and the oil and the upkeep and the maintenance, not to mention the payments to get from point A to point B. And then comes insurance, and then come the accidents, and, you know, the whole thing. Tickets. You know, I mean, there's no end to it. We have so many time-saving devices. You don't have to go to a neighbor now to ask him a question. You just ring him on the phone. With the result that we never get together, but we're always on the phone. Right? Time can be a friend, or time can be an enemy. Let me give you, well, I'll tell you what, time is passing by. Let me give you a few points to ponder. We're going to look at James. As a matter of fact, turn with me to James, and I'll just show you the passage, and then I'll give you a few points to reflect on, and we'll come back Sunday morning. James picks up where Ecclesiastes leaves off in the need that we have to manage our time. James chapter 4, verse 13. Here's what he says. Come now. Literally, the Greek says, go now, but we wouldn't understand that. So it says, come now. You who say, today or tomorrow, we will go into such and such a city. We will spend a year there. We will engage in business and we'll make a profit. In verse 13, one verse, you have five violations of the plan of God in that one little verse. Five failures to manage time. Five failures to develop a sense of urgency. We're going to look at those five things on Sunday morning. Notice how he follows up in verse 14. He says, yet you don't know what your life will be like tomorrow. Here's a guy planning his life for the next year and he doesn't even know what's going to happen tomorrow. How many people here can tell me what's going to happen tomorrow? Tomorrow may be the greatest day of your life. Who knows? You may win the lottery. That'd be the worst day of your life, probably. There may be phenomenal blessing in store for you tomorrow. Or tomorrow may be the day of your greatest tragedy. You don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. Now, Will didn't know Sunday when he was out there running around playing with the kids that he was going to twist his ankle and be running around on crutches for a while. That day, that was in store. But you couldn't have woke up that morning and said, for the next week I'm going to be on crutches. Because you don't know. Look at what he says. He says, you are just a vapor that appears for a little while and then vanishes away. Go out on a cold morning and when you exhale, look at the vapor that your breath causes And look how long it takes that to vanish away. And look at it as a lifetime. Now, with all the emphasis I've put on a sense of urgency, I want to caution you, and I'm going to leave you with a few points of caution. Don't let a sense of urgency turn into haste. There's a big, big difference between a sense of urgency and a sense of haste. Let me give you a few points. Point one, there are dangers involved in haste. Haste makes waste. You ever hear that? And your old teachers ever grind any of these old sayings into your mind? We had an old teacher, I'll never forget, her name was Mrs. Hoffman. She was one of those teachers every kid remembers. She was the teacher that kids almost considered suicide before graduating and going to the next class and being in her class. I mean, she was as big as Farmer Brown's mule and twice as mean. She had a raspy voice. She looked like she'd been teaching since 30 A.D. And everyone was terrified of her. And I remember being in Mrs. Hoffman's class. She was one of those people who could see everything that went on in class. Right? Just the absolute dread of your life. But I'll tell you one thing she used to do. She drilled into us those old sayings. Haste makes waste. If you don't have something good to say, don't say anything. And if you did, she'd backhand you. So you knew that she meant. I mean, she was a tough old-time teacher. There's danger in haste. Psalm 31:22. David said, "For I said in my haste, I am cut off from before your eyes. Nevertheless, you heard the voice of my supplications when I cried to you." You know what happened? David got in a hurry. And he threw up a prayer, and he didn't get the answer immediately. And he said, "God's forgotten about me." Nevertheless, God answered his prayer in the course of time, when it was time. But he got in a hurry. Psalm 116, verse 11. "I said in my haste, all men are liars." Are all men liars? No, just 99% of them. Not all of them. You and I live in a nation of liars. I mean, we're living in a generation of liars. It's to the point where people can't tell the truth when the truth's the easiest thing to tell. I mean, everything has to be changed. But you know what? All men are not liars. Isaiah 28:16. I love this. This is one of my favorite verses on time. "He who believes in Him," speaking of Jesus Christ, "shall not make haste." Think about that for a minute. As an application of a life of faith, where does stress fit in? Where does 35 things to do that day come in? He who believes, that is, he who trusts in Him, will not be in a hurry, will not make haste. He'll have a sense of urgency. He'll have a sense of dedication and commitment. He'll have a sense of redeeming time. He'll have a sense of making the minutes and the hours and the days count, but not haste. Haste can be very dangerous. You know, Wyatt Earp was an amazing gunfighter. He went through a lot of gun battles, and not once in his life was he ever hit by a bullet. Not one time. Not once did he ever go into a gun battle and fail to win. Why? I've done a lot of study on these old-timers. He said the number one rule of gunfighting is take your time. He said the man who takes his time wins. What is it that gets you killed? Haste. If you're in a hurry, when it's time to draw a bead and press that trigger and hit the mark, you're going to miss. And therefore, you have to learn to take your time under tremendous pressure because that other guy is shooting at you too. Faith would come in pretty handy there, wouldn't you say? He who believes in Him shall not make haste. Point two. God has established four limits in your existence. Whether you like it or not, you are fenced in. As a matter of fact, the Scripture tells us that God has fenced us in. Job says in Job 14 and verse 5, His days are determined and His limits you have set, and He cannot pass them. There are four walls around you. One is called space. You can't change it. You can never be two places at one time. One is called matter. If you don't believe that's a limit, go run your head into a brick wall sometime. You'll be convinced that that is a limit you cannot change or break. One is called intellect. I mean, we all have a certain amount of intellect, and that's all we have. And it's wise to learn your limitations. I mean, don't try to be a brain surgeon if, you know, God designed you to be a garbage collector. The fourth is time. It's a limit. God has given you so much. He has allotted you a number of days to be on this earth. Listen, God already has written in His book the day and the manner of your death. It's already recorded. It could be tomorrow. It could be tonight. Maybe it's a week away, a year away. God has it all written down. You can't change it. This is what Jesus meant when He said to the disciples, "Which of you by taking thought," in other words, by mental concentration, "can add a cubit to your lifespan?" What was a cubit? 18 inches. In other words, as you're walking along through life, if this is the square of ground that God intended you to die on, you're not going to get 18 inches further. That's it. So that brings us to point three. When we make haste, we violate time and therefore the other three boundaries as well. Have you ever stopped and thought about how much injury there is, how much pain is caused by trying to violate those things? Get in a hurry. What happens? You're late for a meeting. The meeting is set. You have to be there, but you're late. Hey, if you're late, you've already violated time. Right? So what are you going to do? You're going to drive faster. You drive faster, you run a red light, minor violation of time, you see the blue lights behind you, and it's a $65 ticket. A little reminder that making haste makes waste. But it can be a lot worse than that. How many times, because of being in a hurry, did someone shove their hand into a piece of machinery that they shouldn't have shoved it into? How many times, simply by being in a hurry, did you try to run out a door before you had it fully open? You ever do that? We never admit it. You know, it was always, well, you know, I ran into a wall in the dark. And no, you didn't. You tried to open the door and run out through it because you were trying to catch Joe before he got away, and you slammed your face into the door. I know, because I've done it. You know, you can't, there you're violating time, matter, and intellect as well. The door's half open and you meet it halfway. And space. You're definitely spaced out after you hit that door. I have a scar that runs right here. I did that. Will and I went up to Denver to watch the Ultimate Fighting Championship, and I was standing, and here's the mirror, and for some crazy reason, they had a wall that came out halfway behind the mirror. And, you know, I was got up, and I shaved and everything, and I turned and started to walk into the room, and here's this wall. I slammed it right into the middle of my head. I've got a scar that's there to this day. A reminder, look behind you before you turn and walk. Don't violate time. There are a lot of accidents and deaths and injuries that are caused simply because of hurry. Don't ever get in too big a hurry. Take your time. Point four, and I'm going to leave you with this, and we'll pick up this with this on Sunday morning. When you're making haste, when you're in a hurry, you will always pay the highest price for the most common things in life. Folks, that is true whether you're talking about fast food, and the reason they call it fast food is because it rushes you on your way to the grave. Most of it's not really fit for eating. It's better than what they have most of the rest of the world, but fast food. What do you know the minute you see the phrase fast food? It's going to be a higher price than if you got slow food. Right? I mean, imagine opening a hamburger joint and calling it Joe's Slow Food. Nobody's going to show up, right? Fast photo. What do you know automatically? It's going to cost you more if you want it back in an hour than it would to wait till tomorrow. You have to have that picture today. Right? I mean, you're not going to live unless that picture is out in your hot little hands today. So we'll pay three times as much. These are simple illustrations. But it goes a lot deeper in life. What do you want in life? You want love? Get in a hurry. You pay a high price and you'll get a poor bargain. You want fulfillment? Get in a hurry. Isn't it amazing that God does everything He does at a very relaxed pace? Watch the seasons change. Did you ever notice the first day that it changed from summer to autumn? I'm kind of peculiar because I look for things like this. I mean, I find the world to be a very fascinating, mysterious place. And I always try to watch in August for that first day when I can tell because the light has changed and my eye has gained the ability to pick it up. It probably changed several days earlier, but that's just the first day I notice it. God does everything in a very slow, in a very relaxed manner. The changing of the seasons, the movement of the planets, even the coming of a storm as it blows through. Everything has its pace. We have to learn to find our pace in life. Take two runners. Who's fast? Well, it depends. The guy that runs the marathon is fast for a marathon. Why? Because he's a marathon runner. He holds the world's record in the marathon. He can run 26 miles faster than anyone else. But then there's a guy that's the 10,000 meter runner, and he'll run off and leave the marathon runner in his race. He's fast. But the guy that runs 10,000 meters is nothing compared to the guy that runs the mile. The guy that runs the mile is much faster. But the guy that runs the mile couldn't compare with a 100-yard sprinter. Who's fast? Depends on what you're talking about. Have you ever asked God to show you the pace for your life? To do that, we have to identify, how far am I going? Isn't that an interesting concept? And once I know how far I'm going, what am I to accomplish? You know as well as I do that if you have one important thing and 15 unimportant things that you're going to try to get done in a day, those 15 unimportant things are going to keep you from doing the one important thing, or you're going to botch it and do a poor job because you didn't pace yourself. I find time to be very fascinating. I find life to be very fascinating. And the more I study in the Bible and the more some of that divine perspective and divine wisdom seeps in, the more I look at it and I just say, what a magnificent plan God has devised and how little we see and understand. We're so spoiled in this country today, we want what we want and we want it now. We're in a hurry. We're on the move. We look at that as a good sign. It's wrong. It's a terrible thing. It builds ulcers, it develops stress, 100, 1,000 maladies come because we're a generation of people who have to have everything right now, and we violate the very boundaries of our existence. What do we lose? We lose what the whole world wants. You know what the whole world wants? A little peace and tranquility. The whole world wants that, at least the whole United States. I mean, they have it in other parts of the world. I know places where people live in their pace. They're very tranquil. They're not dying of ulcers and cancer and heart attacks and everything else. Men and women that are 75, 80 years old are tall and straight and strong. They can carry loads that would crush a lot of young men in this country. But you never see them in a hurry. You never see him rushing around like this. I can't picture Jesus Christ rushing through Jerusalem. You know? I mean, you don't see that in the Bible. Like Alice after the rabbit. I'm late, you know? No. I always sense as I read the story of Christ, as he moved, a guy comes and says, "Quick, my daughter's dying." You don't see him say, "Quick, guys, on the road, there they go." No. He says, "Take me to her." Always at a pace. We'll look at it from that point on as we pick up. We have a lot to see in James. We're going to look at five things we do that cause us to fail to properly manage our time. And all of this is going to lead us around to Ephesians chapter 5, where he says, be wise. What is one of the most wise things we can do? Redeem